Let us say this together. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Mercy. I don't know about you, but I want some mercy. I don't want to get what I always deserve. And when things go wrong in my life, I want mercy. Because things go wrong. Things happen. Today we're going to look at the life of Saul and Jonathan and their relationship with a certain guy named David. Some of you may have heard of this guy called David. Anybody familiar with David? And we're not talking about David Harris over here. We're talking about David in the Bible. Because there's an interesting relationship there. We think of mercy. Mercy refers to helping those who are afflicted. If somebody's in a place of affliction where things are going wrong and helping them, that is showing mercy. But the mercy here is helping those who are afflicted, those who are in hard straits or hard places. I don't know about you, but as we read Scripture, we know that we all need God's mercy because we're all start off in a bad place. We're all sinners. We're all in a wrong relationship with God, so we need some help. But today I want to look at how we should respond to others and show mercy to others. And our examples today are one Saul and one Jonathan. So we introduced to King Saul in 1 Samuel. Saul is the first king of Israel. He's not the greatest, and most of his great victories come as a result of others. First of his son Jonathan, and then from that guy we heard about before called David. Saul started off looking really good. He started off, the Spirit of God came upon him. He prophesied, and he started looking like he was going to do good, and then he started wavering. Trying to do things to, like, if I do this, maybe God will give us the victory. And later when he was in a situation, he waffled on what God told him to do. And at one point, God told the prophet Samuel, "It's it, I'm done with him. I'm not going to use him as king anymore. I'm going to anoint someone else." And that person was David. So we're introduced to David in 1 Samuel chapter 16. And actually, most of us think about David first being introduced, meeting Goliath. But actually, Saul and David met earlier. Saul, because of his disobedience, a spirit came upon him. They say a spirit from the Lord, but it was an evil spirit. God allowed it, so the Jews said, yeah, that came from God. It said, whenever the Spirit of God, Spirit from God, not the Spirit of God, is the Spirit from God, came on Saul, David would take up his lyre and play, and relief would come to Saul. He would feel better, and the evil spirit would leave him. David was introduced to Saul because he was having this tormenting spirit. And as we know today, if your spirit is troubled, good music can bring peace. And so they are saying, we need to find somebody who can play the harp, the lyre, really good for the king. And they said, we know a guy named David. And they brought him in, he played it. And at first, Saul was enamored with David. He helped him, let him be his armor bearer, which meant he helped him put his armor on and helped carry it for him. Yeah, he had the grunt job. You know, what was your job, David, starting off with the king? I got to drag around his armor and play music for him when he's in a bad mood. But David did it. Later, in 1 Samuel chapter 17, we see a time of battle taking place. And David shows up, and this is where the story we most know about. David versus Goliath. David comes in, sees everybody running away from Goliath, and David looking around says, excuse me, why is everybody running? We're God's people. Why should we be afraid of that giant? And everybody else is looking at David saying, are you mad? Have you seen that guy? Of course, we know the difference. David was looking at God. Everybody else was looking at the giant. David went out. He defeated the giant with a sling. And because of this, he received great honor and great prestige in Saul's army. Saul promoted him and gave him a place of recognition. But also, because Saul had this insecurity within him, he started seeing David as a threat. That's usually one of two things happens when you have a strong leader comes up within an organization. Either the person in charge recognizes it and leans into him and uses their expertise, or they looked at him as a threat. Some of you have probably been in both situations. You were doing well, and somebody above you thought you were a threat, so they made sure to discreetly show you the door, or maybe not so discreetly. David, of course, like I said, started off, he's showing mercy to Saul by, first of all, playing the harp for him, then by defeating an enemy that the rest of Israel was afraid of. He's standing up and doing what's right. And now all of a sudden, as the story goes on, David is being put in a position of greater and greater danger. First of all, because of his ability, and second of all, because Saul is seeing him as a threat. First Samuel chapter 18, verses 1 through 4 says, after David finished talking with Saul, he met with Jonathan, the king's son, and there was an immediate bond between them, for Jonathan loved David. And then from that day on, Saul kept David with him and wouldn't let him return home. And Jonathan made a solemn pact with David because he loved him as he loved himself. Jonathan sealed the pact by taking off his own robe and giving it to David, and gathering his tunic, sword, and bow, and belt. See, Jonathan steps in here at the beginning of the story. David doesn't have really anything to be a warrior. I don't know about you, but I had RJ come up here and say, okay, you look like you're pretty good with a BB gun. We're going to let you charge first into battle. And he's like, BB gun, hand-to-hand combat. You up for this? Maybe you use the club like. That's what David was going into. Oh, yeah, you know what? I forgot. David also had a staff. I don't know, but a staff's okay, but if you're going up against a sword, you better be awfully good with that staff and awful good at ducking. And he didn't have any armor. In fact, at the beginning of the campaign against the Philistines, there were exactly two swords. Saul had one and Jonathan had one. Now, as they had more victories, they, of course, got more. But it's a beautiful symbolism here. Jonathan cares for David. He's like a brother to him, even closer than a brother. And Jonathan shows mercy on David. David's in a place where he's now going to be responsible for going out into battle. He doesn't have armor. He doesn't have a sword. And Jonathan gives him his very own. I don't know about you, but I think that's a pretty scary place if you're going to be going out chasing into battle and you got nothing to defend yourself when you got that type of place where you know you don't have a sword, you don't have armor, and you've got to face these guys. Like I said, this wasn't standing behind with a sling. David was now expected to go out in front. And Jonathan shows him mercy by giving him what he really needs. And when we show mercy to others, we give them what they truly need. But I think the greater than that was not just the fact that Jonathan gave David his armor and his sword and his robe. But it gave him his friendship. I don't know about you, but sometimes having someone who you know has your back is worth more than anything else. And sometimes the greatest mercy we can give someone is not money, isn't the equivalent of a sword, whatever it would be in our lives, but it would just be being that friend. Because, got to remember, David's from a backwater's way. He's got nothing really to give Jonathan in return. But they joined together as brothers. As the story goes, it says, whatever Saul asked David to do, David did it successfully. So Saul made him a commander over the men of war and appointed him appointment that was welcomed by the people and Saul's officers alike. And when victorious Israelite army was returning home after David had killed the Philistines, women from all of the towns of Israel came out and met King Saul. They sang and danced for joy with tambourine and cymbals. And their song was, Saul has killed his thousands and David his tens of thousands. For an insecure man, that's the worst thing you can have. And Saul was insecure. This made Saul very angry. What's this? He said. They credit with David with ten thousands and me with only thousands. Next, they'll be making him their king. So from that time on, Saul was kept a jealous eye on David. And the very next day, a tormenting spirit from God overwhelmed Saul. And he began to rave in his house like a madman. And David was playing the harp as he did each day. But Saul had a spear in his hand. And he suddenly hurled at David, intending to pin him to the wall. But David escaped him twice. Pinning him to the wall, this is making very clear. He's trying to kill him. He's not trying to injure him, you know, or pin him up like we see sometimes when somebody shoves something through somebody in a movie and they've got him pinned up next to the wall and say, now you can't get away. No, he wasn't aiming for the shoulder. He was aiming for the heart. Things are bad for David. Saul was afraid of David. For the Lord was with David and turned away from Saul. Finally, Saul sent him away and appointed him commander over 1,000 men. And David led his troops into battle. And here we see Saul is sending David out even more. Here, you've done well in the past. We're going to give you even more. Actually, he wasn't actually hoping he'd do well. He set him in charge of the elite troops to send him out. Hopefully, from all that we can see here, he was hoping to get him killed. Of course, God was with David, and every time he sent him out, hopefully get him killed, he looked even better. Nothing worse for an insecure person. Saul was insecure. He was upset. And so what did he do? He reached out and tried to hurt David. And you notice I put it up there, hurt people hurt people. That's because some of the people we live with and we work around, they're hurting. And so therefore, they're attacking. Their insecurity, as it was with Saul, caused them to be jealous and they attack. What should be their strongest ally. They attack. And this is the noticing, even when David continues to show mercy. How does David show mercy? Well, he's playing his harp for him, even when he's acting like a madman and tries to kill him. After that, you know me, I would have said, I'm out of here. You know, I just got this thing. Somebody tries to kill me, I'm thinking I'm out of there. David says, this is the king. I'm still going to be faithful. And Israel still needs a leader to help them in the victories that are coming. So what does David do? David continues to show mercy. I don't know about you, but don't you think the smart thing to do might have been run? Yeah. No, David continues to show mercy. Continues to try to do what's right. And when you look through chapter 18 and 19, it gets worse and worse. But in 1 Samuel chapter 20, David goes to his friend for help, his friend Jonathan. And Jonathan shows mercy. David goes to his friend and says, I think your dad's trying to kill me. Kind of clear there. He knew he was. But how do you go to your best friend and say, by the way, I think your dad's amazing, a crazy lunatic, and he's out to be killing me? I don't know about you. I'd have trouble going to my friend and telling him that. But Jonathan takes it. He says, well, let's try to figure out what's going on. So they come up with a plan. 1 Samuel chapter 20, starting in verse 27, says, so David hid himself in the field. And when the new moon festival began, the king sat down to eat. And he sat at his usual place against the wall, Jonathan sitting opposite him, and Abner behind him. But David's place was empty. Saul didn't say anything about this that day. For he said to himself, something must have made David ceremonially unclean. But when David's place was empty again the next day, Saul asked Jonathan, why hasn't the son of Jesse been here for the meal either yesterday or today? Jonathan replied, David earnestly asked if he could go to Bethlehem. He said, please let me go, for we are having a family sacrifice. My brother demanded that I be there. If you all know that David was the youngest, when the older brother says, you better be here, you better be there. But this was all a ruse. They're actually trying to find, Jonathan's trying to find out what Saul's, what his dad's motives actually are. Goes on and says, so please let me get away to see my brothers. That is why he isn't here at the king's table. Saul boiled with rage at Jonathan. You stupid son of a whore. How do you think that maybe Jonathan is in trouble here? Yeah. You know, I want to point out something here. Jonathan has been a hero for his brother, standing beside him, helping him time after time. And now all of a sudden, unfortunately, maybe some of you have had fathers like that. And it's sad. That's why I'm glad that God brings other men into our lives if we've had fathers that have been less than honorable. It said he swore at him. Do you think I do not know that you want him to be king in your place, shaming yourself and your mother? As long as the son of Jesse is alive, you will never be king. Now go and get him that I can kill him. But why should he be put to death? Jonathan asked his father. What has he done? Then Saul hurled a spear at Jonathan, intending to kill him. You thought being cussed out was bad. So at last, Jonathan realized his father was really determined to kill David. How heartbreaking it must have been for Jonathan. First of all, to see his friend, the king, wanting to kill him, but also seeing his father's attitude toward him. It wasn't many years before that, Jonathan was the prince that everyone loved, that Saul was looking forward to doing well and taking his place. And now all of a sudden, Saul's cussing him out and trying to kill him. So David ends up leaving. Jonathan warns him and David leaves. The story unfolds. Later, Jonathan, trying to be the faithful person he's supposed to be, stays with his father, fights beside him, even until they come up to a place where they both end up dying in battle. David lost his friend. He became king. And then at that moment, Saul, despite everything Saul done, David showed mercy. He didn't try to kill Saul. I don't know about you, if you're my best friend and your dad tries to kill me, I might be tempted to, you know, maybe push him off the edge of a cliff if he's after me. I might be tempted to do something like defend myself. David doesn't. In fact, he doesn't actually try to take the kingship. He waits until something happens to Saul and Jonathan, the people come to him. After this, when David does become king, mercy is shown because of Jonathan to Saul's family. He asks the people, he says, is anyone around of Jonathan's line? Any of the sons of Saul still around? And he said, there is one guy. I usually mispronounce his name. Let's see if I can get it right today. Mephibosheth. Why would you name a kid that? Anyway, in 1 Samuel, or 2 Samuel chapter 9, they find him and bring him to him. He's crippled. And in those days, if you had an heir of a king, you killed them. But David returned the property. He gave him his life. He gave him servants. And also gave him a place at the king's table. Now, it sounds like he's just eating at the king's table. But this was actually a place where decisions were made, where the king would come and they would sit down and they'd eat and they'd talk about what was happening in their nation, in the nation. This was a place of honor. And David is having mercy on Mephibosheth for the sake of his father who showed him mercy. And later, David went and gathered the bones of Jonathan and of Saul, brought them to Jerusalem, and buried them with honor. I don't know about you, but that's showing a lot of mercy. Especially to the guy who wanted to kill him. But for the sake of Jonathan, David showed mercy. And so we see here in a very real sense, Jonathan showed mercy, and mercy was given to him. And God's promise is when we are merciful, He will be merciful to us. And I don't know about you, but we all face times in our life when it's hard. And we need mercy. But God calls us to be like Jonathan and show mercy to others. The thing about it is, showing mercy isn't always an easy thing to do. I've confessed right during the sermon that I felt like I wouldn't want to just show mercy. I'd want to get back. You're trying to kill me. I want to try to defend myself. I need to work on things, okay? I just do. But we see Jonathan. Jonathan's mercy actually cost him. And sometimes when you show mercy to others, in the short term, it may cost you. If you see somebody who needs a little bit of money and you give them money, guess what? You're giving up. It's going to cost you. But sometimes it costs you more than that. Especially if what a person needs is time or friendship. It's going to cost you. For a number of years, I worked as a hospice chaplain. I enjoyed the work, but let me tell you, there were many days it was costly. I would go home. Because there's nothing you can say to somebody who's lost a loved one. or whose loved one is in the other room dying. And this person has young children. Or the person has been the sole support for their family. What do you say? But being there helps them. But it costs you emotionally. But I'll tell you what, it was worth it. Sometimes, oftentimes showing mercy in the short term costs us. And it cost Jonathan. First of all, it cost him clothes and his armor. You're like, well, that may have not been much. But it did cost him. Later, it cost him honor because David was the new hero. Before that, Jonathan was everyone was singing the praises of. Now, all of a sudden, David was the one singing praises, being sung praises about. And because Jonathan supported him, said, go out there. The honor that Jonathan could have got was lost to David. But Jonathan was okay with that. As we see, it was going to cost him the kingship. We don't know at what point, but at some point, it is sure that Saul found out, or Saul said that David was going to be king, and it's sure that Jonathan found out from his friend David when they talked about what was going on, that I have to believe that David said, by the way, the prophet came to my house and anointed me. I can't imagine what that must have been like. I have to wonder if David said, Jonathan, I don't want to be king. I want you to be king. And Jonathan, seeing who David was, saying, no, you're the guy. If God chose you, I want to support you. So Jonathan, by showing mercy to David, gave up the kingship. He ended up losing his relationship with his father, the king. I don't know about you, but sometimes losing family relationships, that hurts. Me and my father had a strained relationship for a number of years, and then finally I found out some things that he was doing, and it just completely shattered it. And that hurt. In fact, I still feel the hurt in my heart today. Because it was broken. And yet, Jonathan said, I'm going to stand up with David because it's the right thing to do. Because he's my friend. Even if it costs me my relationship with my father. And also nearly cost him his life by the same father that he had just lost his relationship with. And though we don't see later on that Saul ever again tried to kill Jonathan, I have to believe their relationship was always strained. Because someone like Saul probably always held that thing in his heart. You want David to become king because you're some sort of wimp or who knows what he thought of. And yet, in spite of that, Jonathan stayed where he thought he needed to be. In a sense, in a very real way, showing mercy to his father as well as to David. The reason I share this today is because sometimes when we show mercy to others, sometimes those people will be David's and they'll return the mercy. Sometimes the people we show mercy for will be more like Saul and they will never show us mercy in return. But the truth is, the person who we want mercy from is someone greater than just a human being. We want mercy from God. The thing I noticed, though, as much as it cost Jonathan to show mercy, it also cost God. It'll cost us a lot, but sometimes, or actually it did cost God a lot. Romans chapter 5, verses 6 and 11 says, "When we are utterly hopeless, Christ came at just the right time and died for us sinners. Now, most people would not be willing to die for an upright person. Though someone might perhaps be willing to die for a person who is especially good, or if they're your kids. Or your spouse too, okay guys? You better say it's your spouse too. But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were still sinners. And since we are made right by God in God's sight by the blood of Christ, he will certainly save us from God's condemnation. For since our friendship with God was restored by the death of his Son, while we were still sinners, we will certainly be saved through the life of his Son. So now we can rejoice in our wonderful news, new relationship with God, because our Lord Jesus Christ has been made us a friend of God." Showing mercy may cost us now, but in the long run, we get far more because we have been shown the greatest mercy from God. While we were yet sinners, he didn't say you got to wait till you get it perfect. He says, you still messing up in your life? In fact, even after you come to Christ and you mess up, he still shows mercy to us. So yes, God sometimes calls us to show mercy, and it's going to cost us. But God says, I too have done it. And he looks at us and says, and I think you're worth it. I think you're worth it. God looks at you and says, I am glad it cost me to show mercy to you. We get far more when we show mercy because God's mercy to us is far greater. Because it saves us, it continues to save us and be with us when we're afflicted, when we're down. And finally, one day, God will make all things right and show us the greatest mercy of all when he takes us into his kingdom. And a thing I can't imagine is he's going to look down. Yeah, I'm going to pick on somebody. And you're right here. And you're getting ready to go front anyway. And he's going to say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Wow. What mercy. What a thing to rejoice over. So let us with joyful hearts show mercy to the world around us. Because when we do it, God will show mercy to us. Now, Father, I ask your blessing upon all these that are here. Walk with them and be with them and let them show forth your mercy to the world around them. And Father, bless the men here today on this Father's Day. Be with them and watch over them and let them show your grace and your mercy. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. God bless you. Thank you.